Bonjour. Je m'appelle Josh Holmes. Je suis ici à parler avec toi à IoT. Non? Non? Okay. Good morning. This is better. Yeah, a little bit. Okay. My name is Josh Holmes. I'm here to speak with you about IoT. Thank you very much to the local DX team for organizing. The last several days, they've been running me ragged. It's been great. I've met several of you and talked about Internet of Things and other things. But so what I do is I'm based out of Seattle. I'm on a team called Strategic Engagements. And our job is to work with the innovators, the people who are breaking ground around the world. A lot of those people are in startups. Some of those people are in innovation labs inside large companies. But we're working with the innovators and helping them solve their biggest and gnarliest challenges. And almost everything that my team does specifically ends up on GitHub under an MIT license. But we work with helping people understand the latest and greatest from Microsoft and how that relates to their business and how they can leverage that. And then where we can, we also write code to make that easier and so on. The last 10 months or so, I've been focused on the Internet of Things. The Internet of Things is an incredibly exciting space right now. It's not, to be honest, a new space. It's been around for a very long time, but part of what makes it really interesting is that in 2008, there was a very exciting moment in time. And that very exciting moment in time is that the number of internet-connected devices matched the world's population. It's kind of a... Now, think back to what happened in leading up to that moment, okay? But in 2008, all of a sudden we had the iPhone, we had the consumerization of a tremendous amount of technology, and all of a sudden people jumped from having maybe one device to having two or three or four. How many people right now in this room, in their backpack, on their person, have more than one device? More than two, three, four, you don't count, five, we had five up here. So you have four. Okay, you have four devices. So I'm assuming at least one phone and one laptop and a tablet. What else? Another computer. So two laptops, a phone, and a tablet. Okay. So that's becoming normal. Okay. Now, if you think about your home, how many internet-connected devices are in your home? So I'm not going to raise hands on this one. I'm just going to go ahead and throw this out there. I counted up the other day, and I had 47 internet-connected devices in my home. Now, part of that is I have teenagers, and they have each multiple laptops, tablets, phones, game stations. But we also have a smart thermometer that is, or thermostat that is connected. We have the water heater reports information, and we can remotely control the base temperature of the water heater. We've got a home security system that is internet connected, and I can remotely access it. We have four internet connected cameras and two internet connected motion detectors in my home. Okay? And so this is also becoming normal. And so it's an exciting time because the Internet of Things has done this. It's just exploded since 2008 because we've now consumerized a lot of this technology that was very hard to come by, very hard to configure, very hard to get access to. But this is not actually a new space. So is anybody in manufacturing? Anybody do any manufacturing? Okay. Anybody in wine production? I know Jawa's family is, okay? Anybody do wine? Anybody drink wine? Okay, all right. Had to get some hands up there. So I can guarantee you There are internet-connected machines, or networked machines at least, involved in the production of wine, involved in the production of these paper cups, involved in the production of these chairs. And there has been for many, many years. There's a set of protocols called OPC, Ole for Process Control. Yes, it's named after Ole, that nasty thing that came before COM that was horrible for Microsoft. But it's the standard inside of a lot of factories, and you'll have conveyor belts talking to pumps, talking to all kinds of different devices, and they're all internet connected, and they're all working together with or without human interaction. And so if something happens in one part of the factory and it's going to delay production to another part, these parts over here are automatically slowing down and managing the line so that we're not running into bottlenecks, we're not running into issues. Okay, this has been happening for 10, 20, 30 years now. But the exciting part about where we're at now is, and I'm going to steal a little bit of Robert's thunder here just for a moment. Just missed the alert there. The exciting part about it now is that we come over and we take a look at some of these new devices here, and I'll let Robert go through and talk about a lot of these different devices. But we've got a lot of little microcontrollers and processors up here. This is called a Tessel. This runs Lua, which is a compiled version of JavaScript. This is the Arduino Yun. This one has got a microprocessor right here that does kind of real-time processing. And then it also has a Linux system on a chip underneath that little silver box there. You guys in the cheap seat can't necessarily see it, but you should have sat in the front row. This isn't church. You didn't have to sit in the back. It's okay. And then we have things like the Raspberry Pi. Is this the 2?
It's the 2, yes.
Yes, okay. So we have the Raspberry Pi 2. And the Raspberry Pi 2, it's an interesting little device. Because here, smaller than my hand, I mean, I've got these big moose claws, but these are smaller than most people's hands, to be honest. I have a 900 megahertz quad-core machine. Now, especially the old guys in the room, like me, what was your first computer?
Deck 10.
How many megahertz did it operate at, the Deck 10? Two. I don't know. So my first machine in the mid-80s, I'm old, was a 25 megahertz 286 DX. So it operated 25 megahertz, and we had a huge, absolutely enormous hard drive, 27 meg. That was enormous. And then we had a full 256K of RAM. That was, again, enormous for the time. This one's got a gig of RAM and a quad-core machine, and it fits in the palm of my hand. The box that we had, my first computer was about this size. And it was portable. By portable, I mean, it had wheels in the bottom and a handle. And you could pull it behind you. And wherever you went, it took you 25 minutes to set up the monitor that was this big. Does anybody remember those? You're showing your age. I'm sorry. But these little devices are getting much, much smaller and much, much cheaper. So, for example, the board that is on the Arduino Yun, behind this little silver right here, that is by a company called Lenino. A company called Dog Hunter. They produce a board called Lenino. And I can buy that chip in quantity with Wi-Fi B, G, and N 2.4 and 5.8 with all of the, with RAM, with some flash memory. I forget the exact specs on it, but I mean, it's a fairly beefy little processor and so on, running an Athos processor. We can drop a number of different hardened embedded operating systems on it. We can buy that chip for $11 a piece if you buy in quantity of 5,000 or more. That's amazing. So all of a sudden, this has become accessible to people. And so on the low end, things are happening all the time. However, at the same time, we're going the other direction as well. And this convergence, this meeting of the small end becoming more powerful and cloud computing has just blown the doors off this whole Internet of Things. Because as we get more and more and more devices out there in the world, the more we need back-end cloud computing to support it. So I'll give you an example. A average flight, plane takes off and lands, hour and a half, 2 hours. During that flight, the average flight produces a terabyte of data. Where do you store that? Well, typically we store it in the cloud because we actually have room up here. And how do you process that much data? Well, again, cloud computing comes in handy there because we can spin up a machine for an hour that's got half a gig of RAM. Half a terabyte of RAM, a 32 processors, each of which are running at several gigahertz. And we can spin that up for a couple of hours, do the crunching of all the data, and then turn that machine off. You can't do that necessarily on premise, because those are incredibly expensive machines to purchase and acquire and so on. We're working with one client. They have, from their Internet of Things, they've got a number of things out there. And, you know, I can't really get into the specifics of it, but they currently have 44 petabytes worth of data that have been produced by devices. 44 petabytes of data. Now, that's a hard number to get your head around. I mean, it's a weird number to think about. But let me put this in context. If you take a snapshot of the web today, every website, everything that is publicly accessible on the internet today, that is about 14 petabytes. And this company has 44 petabytes of data. That's a lot of data. How do you process that much data? Well, on premise, they're struggling. How do you do that on premise? So what they're doing is they're leveraging some of the building blocks that we have in Azure to do that. And so they're looking at our big data visualization. They're looking at machine learning, which is not on this slide, but it'll be on a future slide. They're looking at running Hadoop at scale and being able to do MapReduce on that data at scale so they can look for patterns and look for things in that data that they can't do necessarily on-premise. And so this beautiful time in the industry where we have so many things happening on the small end and so many things happening on the back end in cloud computing, it's a beautiful time to be in the industry, and it's why IoT, Internet of Things, is so hot and sexy right now is because this is enabling new scenarios and enabling things. Even though this is an old space, we can do more now than we ever have been able to do in the past. And especially for startups. So you'll hear shortly from several startups who are doing stuff in the Internet of Things space. The devices are getting so much cheaper, so they're accessible. Manufacturing of these devices, I was able to make a phone call to a guy in Tianjin and start getting specs and send him designs, and he sent me back and we're able to collaborate, and bam, I have devices being produced. And I'm able to produce a small run of 100 of these devices for about $40 a piece, and when we get to scale, we're going to get them down under $20. That's awesome. Rewind 5 years, that was not possible. And then on the server side, again, with cloud computing, all of a sudden, it doesn't take anything for me to get started. Before I start making any money, I'm not paying anything for cloud computing. Once I start making money, my usage goes up, my what I pay goes up. But I'm not paying before I start acquiring customers. And so that is a beautiful thing because my startup cost is incredibly low. So this is how we think of the Internet of Things at Microsoft. And so if you look at on the bottom, there are a tremendous number of different devices that are out there in the world, some of which are these little kinds of controllers and this kind of stuff. Other things are like cars. Okay, or it could be a smoke detector, fire alarm, could be a temperature sensor, you know, all the way up to, you know, homes, you know, have lots of sensors and data. When I look around this room, I see internet-connected cameras, I see Wi-Fi hotspots, I see projectors that are potentially producing a lot of data. I don't know if these ones are or not, but they could be. I see a lot of possible sensors and a lot of possible ways to produce data and accumulate knowledge about what's happening in this room itself. Once you start looking at all the different devices, those are connected up to some type of a cloud infrastructure. And there we can do telemetry data for monitoring, and we can do lots of different monitoring. And then we have command and control back for remote access to tell the device what to do, to configure the device, to distribute content out to the device so that it can more efficiently work with its surroundings. On top of that, we have all the data processing and message routing. Other things that are happening at this layer include things like, and Robert's going to show you a handful of these things here in a few minutes. Machine learning, stream analysis, so we can actually do live analytics of the stream coming in and look for anomalies, look for events, look for issues, processing data in real time. And again, we're doing this at scale. One of my customers is producing 4 gigabytes a second worth of data and pushing that into the front door of Azure, and we're able to process that in real time. 4 gigabytes a second. So every day I wake up and I go, woohoo, I get to go play today. It's just an exciting time to be in the industry. Then we surface that in dashboards and line of business applications and ways to make your business and your life better. Okay, because all of this data, all of this access, all these devices, they don't mean anything unless you're changing how your business works. Unless you're changing how you perceive the world and how the world perceives you, okay? And then we categorize that into a number of different verticals. Microsoft, we typically don't produce vertical solutions. Typically, what we do is we produce horizontals, and we build building blocks for you to go build your vertical solutions, okay? So likelihood is we're not going to go build a security and surveillance system. We work with a number of startups and a number of other companies that do produce security and surveillance systems, and we provide them building blocks that help them build that vertical so that it's secure, so that it's scalable, so that it's, has all the right learnings, has all the right parts in order to really be an effective system. Same thing in retail. You know, we're likely not going to go produce a end-to-end retail system. However, we're working with a number of companies that are doing that. Actually, there's some great Portuguese startups that I've already met with who are in that space, and we're talking to them about how we can help them be stronger and better and reach more customers. Okay, so this is what I think of when I think of the Internet of Things. And where I want to see this go is I want to see this, on a micro scale, just for me personally. There's a number of different places where I want this to work for me. One of those is when I walk into my room. I'm come home from a long day at work. Got a little headache, a little grumpy. I walk in the door. I want my house to recognize and say, oh, that's Josh, and he's in a bad mood. So we're going to dim the lights a little bit because he's probably got a headache. We'll, prep some ibuprofen or paracetamol or, whatever your tequila, and put on a little thrash metal. Oh, that's Josh, and he's in a good mood. Put on a little blues, a little jazz, a little funk. And it's going to prepare the room, prepare the house for me so that I don't have to think about it. And how does it know this? Well, the way that it knows this is I didn't go tell it. When I'm in a bad mood, do this. What I want it to do is I want the house to observe me. And I want the house to learn from me. And when it detects that I'm in a bad mood, I want it to see what music I put on and start suggesting that and start playing that for me so I don't have to think about it anymore. And once it learns from me, I want it to adapt to me so that when Robert walks in the room and he's in a bad mood, it's going to put on a little Bach, you know, a little classical music.
Classical music, that would be perfect.
And so, because he's German. And so I want the house to work for me. But it has to be able to do that at scale so that your house works for you and your house works for you and your house works for you and so on. Now, but I also wanted to start looking at, in healthcare as an example, I'm working with an Icelandic startup, and they are, they're analyzing data at an immense scale. And what they're doing is they're doing glucometer readings. So they're pulling blood sugar, they're pulling heart rate, they're pulling exercise data, they're pulling all kinds of different minerals from the body. So they're not just doing blood sugar, they're pulling iron and magnesium and all kinds of different minerals from the body. And they're analyzing that versus what you think that you're eating, because they're actually, they're pulling data from other sources where, I'm trying to remember the name of the app now. Wow, my brain just completely fried on that one. Anyways, so there's an app where you can enter in what you're supposed to be eating or what you supposedly ate. And so they're analyzing your food. They're analyzing what it does to your body. They're analyzing your exercise. They're analyzing heart rate, heart pressure, all kinds of different things. And they're producing data that is going to help save lives. And it's going to help doctors understand how diabetes works, how hypertension works, how all these different things with the body work, and not the once a year when you actually go to the doctor, or the every other year when you actually go to the doctor, or the every 5 years when you see your doctor. It's they're constantly working with the doctor and letting them know how you're doing. And that is going to change healthcare when the doctor can have a real stream from their patients on a daily basis, not just, oh, last minute before I go into the doctor, I should take my blood sugar a couple of times and go in and tell them what it was. No, we can actually see what it was and what the chart was over the last 12 months and how that can, how that differed with your food and how that differed with everything else. So I see the Internet of Things really helping in a lot of different directions. But in addition to, my own personal little things, at scale, we're seeing this impacting the industry in a great way. So if you talk about just the commercial airline industry, if we can get 1% fuel savings, that is 30 billion euro over the next 15 years. If we look at home energy, gas-fired generation, 1% fuel savings, $66 billion. That's starting to get into actual real money. Healthcare, if we can get a 1% system inefficiency in addition to all the lives that we save, we're going to save $63 billion. So that makes everybody happy. Patients live longer, doctors are able to provide better medicine, and the financial people are able to approve it. If we get into public transport, 1% reduction in capital expenditure, $27 billion. This list could go on and on and on. But the idea is that we're going to start with your devices. There's a lot of devices that are already out there. There's a lot of devices that are coming that are very cheap, very easy. They are providing you data that you analyze and help understand the rules and the models and more. And that only matters if it's going to affect the way that you do business. Okay. Now, as I said a minute ago, Microsoft, we're typically not producing end-to-end vertical solutions. What we do is we produce building blocks. okay? And there's a lot of these great building blocks that you're going to be able to work with. So, for example, we've got a number of different data storage options in Azure. We've got some amazing ingest options. So when I talk about producing 4 gigabytes a second worth of data, can your servers handle 4 gigabytes worth of data per second? There's a handful of you in the room that I know can do that. But outside of the very small handful of you, Sapo, I know you guys can. Everybody else, that's a very hard thing to build up that infrastructure. And we can just lease it to you, just give it to you for a rental. And so your devices talking in through the gateway, getting into the cloud, you need to be able to store that, you need to be able to process it in real time, and you need to be able to change your business and push that back to the individual dashboards and portals. So to show how some of these pieces work, some of these building blocks, I'd like to bring up Robert and have him explain a little about some of the building blocks in Azure. So, yeah. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Josh. Yeah, so thanks, Josh, for the intro. My name is Robert Eichenseer. I work out of Germany, as you can hear from my strong accent. So I'm not here for the fun part. That's the mission of Josh. I'm here for the work. And let me change the slide deck to another one, IoT practical use. Yeah, I'm working in the same team as Josh is working. But Josh, as already mentioned, is working on the fun side of the house. I'm working with partners, with customers in the business side of the house. So I'm really, or my major goal is to help you adopting cloud technologies, to help you getting in the Internet of Things world up to speed, to use really your imagination and our building blocks to build systems, to create solutions which will work and which will change the world. And I have a showcase today with me. It's a showcase from a mid-sized company in Germany. The company is called Krones. And Krones, they are very strong in the packaging industry. So they are producing machinery, they are producing machines which help other companies filling beverages into bottles. And according to Krones, every third or fourth bottle worldwide is filled with a machine produced by Krones. So you could imagine all the big players in the beverage market, most of them are using their machinery. And you could imagine how expensive it is to maintain, to run such a machinery. They can produce up to, I think, 1,000 liter per second in a bottle. So they fill 1,000 liter of beverages per second in a bottle. And you could imagine what kind of data they are producing, how much data they are producing. And if we just have the possibility to optimize, let me say, the maintenance of these machines, if we optimize that, it would be a huge, huge benefit. It would be a huge saving for Krones, because then they can offer something which is proactive instead of reactive. And you could imagine if one of these filling stations is somewhere in the middle of nowhere, somewhere in a desert, somewhere in a jungle, how long it takes to bring spare parts to the production lines. And if maybe Krones knows upfront, hey, in 2 weeks, one of these devices will break, and they will already send it 2 weeks before, then the production line can really produce simultaneously, round the clock, 24/7, the beverages. And this is a huge, huge, let me say, advantage if they have a system like this. And we in Germany, we work with them to produce something like that. And this is just a showcase, what I would like to show to you. But it is live, it's real time, it's in pilot phase at the moment. And this is a dashboard which just symbolizes, which just shows how data is flowing. So every dot is a production line, and every dot is creating telemetry data. So how many bottles are filled, what's the temperature of the machine, how is the energy consumption of a machine, and so on. And Krones can see here the connectivity. 80% of the machines are connected. The total amount of machines is something like 40,000. And all the data is flowing into a centralized data center. And once a while, you see a pop-up. Here is a pop-up, an alert. So a company has a problem right at the moment with a machinery. It could be a temporary, or it could be a serious one. So this is a dashboard which Krones is using. Let us go one step deeper, and let us go to a dashboard which a company who is using Krones machines can use. And let us think this is really a worldwide acting company. And this is the dashboard for a production line supervisor. And if he looks to, let me say, the energy consumption, I click here, then I see in real time the energy consumption of all the production plants. I see the energy consumption. Here is a here's a plant in Spain with an index of 82, and another plant in Spain has an energy index of 72. And you see the numbers are changing in a second interval. So this is real time. This is something what we host on our platform, and we have device emulators in the cloud who are sending the telemetry data. Let us go one step further. Let us now drill down really on a production line. So this is the view, a dashboard view, of someone who is responsible for a single production line. And here we have all the machinery which is necessary to fill beverages into bottles. And for example, here we have something what is called a filler. So really the device who is filling the beverage into the bottle. And we see an over health KPI of that machine. And let me switch again to the energy consumption. So we see here in the second interval the energy consumption. We see with a blue line a comparison with another time frame. So maybe from yesterday, maybe from last week, maybe if it's a seasonal product, from the last season. So with one view, the guy can see, the responsible guy can see, hey, how am I doing compared to another, let me say, time period? Or more interesting, we do here with the gray column a prediction. Are we on a good road or are we on a bad road? So do we have to change something or is it going better? We also have a prediction with this small arrow, what you see on top. So going down means energy is going down, which means it's good. If the arrow shows up, then we have a problem because the energy or the machine is consuming more energy. And why do we do all that stuff? It's all about, in that showcase, about predictive maintenance. Because the machinery is engineered and built in Germany in that case, or maybe in another place of the world, but it is operated in a complete different ecosystem, maybe in a desert where you have complete different humidity. And the engineers who have created that machine, they really optimized it to a specific geo, to a specific environment. But if that machine is now running in a different environment, maybe the maintenance plans are not so good anymore. So maybe just replacing a filter more often or less often can change the whole productivity of the plant. It can change everything. It can change a lot of money which I lose or a lot of money which I can earn. So it's all about this predictive maintenance thing. And to show you what we are done here also, I have something, what we call a device emulator. Let me start up that guy. And this is, again, the view of the production line. I go to the filler. And now I can ingest telemetry data, which is sent to our backend. And in this telemetry data, there are some indications that there is a problem, maybe a loose connection or a sudden leak. Let me go for a sudden leak. So a leak in a compressor system. And now I'm ingesting telemetry data into our centralized system. And our centralized system is just processing that telemetry data. And let me go back to the dashboard. Here it is. And let me see if we already have something. Nope. Let me simulate that one. Philip. So here we have now an analyze of this incoming telemetry data. And what is the analytics part doing? So the analytics part has recognized that energy consumption pattern. So the energy consumption is slowly going up. Together with the Krones engineers, we defined a pattern saying, hey, if we have something like that pattern, then something is going wrong. And in this case, it's an indicator for a sudden leak in the compressor system. So the compressor is still working fine. So you don't see any problems in the production line itself, but you already have the indication that maybe that compressor will go out of business next week, maybe in 24 hours, maybe in an hour. So you already have the necessary information to do predictive maintenances. And in that case, it's pretty easy. We can convert that suggestion that something needs to be done into a work order. That work order goes to the maintenance force. They have a tablet application. They don't have a HoloLens so far. We are working on that. But they have a tablet application, and they see exactly what they have to do with the recommendation from the Krones engineers who have built that machine with a step-by-step intro or with a step-by-step hands-on lab, what they have to do. You could imagine what that means when it comes to predictive maintenance and to run production plans. And this is just a simple example from a manufacturing industry. Think about connected cars, maintenance of connected cars. Think about green energy. When I flew in yesterday to Lisbon, I've seen a lot of windmills. Think about the maintenance of these windmills. Think about offshore windmill parks, where it's not so easy to maintain them, where you maybe have a weekly maintenance rhythm, where you go with a boat to that offshore platforms. And if you would have that information, that would be great, because it will help you take the right spare parts with you. And this is just a showcase, what I think is interesting for you. But having that showcase in mind, let us talk a little bit about communication patterns. What does it need to create a solution like this? And the most easy communication pattern is always the telemetry ingest, more or less sending the information from one of those tiny devices, maybe from an Arduino UNO, or maybe from a Tesla, maybe from something you have developed, you name it, from which device, just sending the data to an endpoint. And who has done something similar? So collecting data and sending it already to an endpoint. I see a few hands. That's good. Please be prepared, because I have some questions. So sorry, you are now the right persons to ask. So that's easy in the first moment. What can we do? What do we have as a technology? Well, we can create a simple REST API endpoint, host it somewhere, then call from the devices this REST API endpoint. Pretty fair, we can do that. And by the way, the guys who, okay, you are the guy who is doing it that way. Here's the second guy. Okay, let us think about the ingest rate. Is it really that easy? How much storage do you have in your system to store all that telemetry data? And then let us think about the security. Let us think some bad guy is taking one of those devices and is sending you wrong telemetry information, not the right one. And that's not a that's a tough word for a German guy. That's a real threat. We have seen that already. Think back a couple of years, Stuxnet. Stuxnet was a virus who was sending wrong telemetry data to a centralized organization, to a centralized processing unit, and the result was machinery was circling higher than allowed, and within a couple of months, the whole production line was destroyed. So that's not a hypothetical threat, it's a real threat. We have to take care about this. And question, do you take care about something like that? Okay, the answer was yes. Okay, good. But how long does it take you to take care about that? I think that's tough development, and we have something to solve that. Let us think about the next command and control patterns. That's not so easy. As Josh already mentioned, I see also a couple of sensors in that room, and there's a smoke detector. What does that smoke detector do when it detects smoke? Nothing. It just sends to a back end, hey, there is smoke in the room, or maybe the temperature is too high, or whatever. And then a centralized system is raising the alarm, is opening the fire doors, is opening the evacuation route. And you see I'm wearing one of these Microsoft badges. That badge opens the doors to the whole building, where we also have, let me say, Windows 10 builds, which might be interesting, where we have HoloLens builds, which might be interesting for bad guys. So if one of that sensors is faked, gets corrupt, and sends to the back end, hey, there is a fire, and the back end just sends a command to the evacuation route to open the door. Everybody can go to the room where we store our sources, where we have our binaries, and can take them. So command and control is very tough to implement, and it's a high, high security risk. Later, I will show you how we can do that. And the next thing is, think again about the huge amount of telemetry which is coming into your backend system. How do you analyze that huge amount? Anybody has an idea how we can analyze that huge amount of data? The guys who are already doing the ingest, how do you analyze your ingest? Okay, let me.
We have some scripts on Azure that do the processing for us.
Very good answer. He has some scripts on Azure which are doing that stuff for him. So first of all, he's on Azure. Good, thank you. You are the reason why I get my monthly income. And on the other side, Azure scales. But I think maybe I have something new for you. Because what I guess, you do data at rest. You store it somewhere in a database, in a storage, and then maybe you run an HD Insight cluster with your script, a big data analytics platform. But do you think this big data analytics platform, more or less this batch-oriented script-based platform, is the right way to detect that there is smoke in the room? Because maybe that batch just runs every 30 minutes, which means, okay, every 30 minutes we get enough information to say, hey, something is burning in the room. Let us open the evacuation doors. Or maybe let them close because it's already gone. So big data and analyze of big data is also a big thing you have to take care of. And now let us go back to the numbers, to the telemetry ingest numbers. Let's do the math. Just for that example from Krones, let us say we have 6 machines in one of that production lines, which is not really much, and we have 20 sensors per machine, which gives us something like 120 sensors per production line. And 120, that's really not a big number. We can deal with that. Let us just create the REST API interface. Let us throw the telemetry data against this REST API. That's cool. Let us do the math further. Let us say we have 4 production lines in a plant. This already gives us 480 sensors. Again, not a big number. Let's do the math further. Let us say every sensor is sending every second a telemetry data, which is 1.7 million, something like 1.5 million inches per hour. Not a big deal, I would say. We can handle this with a couple of instances running on Azure. Maybe we can also handle it with instances running on AWS, but I know we can do it on Azure. Let us go further. Let us now think about Krones and if they want to offer this predictive maintenance service to a few of their customers. And if we just say, let us offer it to 50 customers, we already have now something like 8.5 million ingests per hour. And having 8.5 million ingests per hour means we have something like 85 million ingests concurrent users per hour. How many concurrent users do we have on Facebook? Similar numbers. How big is the Facebook data center? I guess bigger than something a mid-sized company who wants to offer such a service can spend money on. So these are really, really, from my point of view, very impressive numbers, which we always have to take care of when we talk about IoT solutions. And here we as Microsoft think we have something for you. We have some building blocks which might help you to really face that challenge, to create really from scratch or maybe to move existing solutions when it comes to IoT into the right direction. Maybe not starting with your own virtual machine and having some endpoints there. And that will work in your lab. That will work during the development. That will work when you go to the first partner, to the first customer. But will it also work when you scale, when you have a second, a third, a fourth, and a fifth customer? Because you are really doing the next big thing, and everybody wants to have it. But maybe then, if you start really with the, let me say, traditional setup, you might have a problem somewhere at a given point in time. And here we have something for you. So who in the audience knows about Service Bus? So I see a few hands. So with Service Bus is really one of our very old services that we have in Azure. It already started 2008 when it still was called Red Dog. But we have a service which is called Relay under the cover of Service Bus. And Relay is something which helps you to establish a one-on-one connection between a device and between your backend. So it's really a one-on-one connection, and this is quite often used when it comes to maintenance tasks. So not when it comes to sending telemetry. This is quite often used when it comes to, I have to do something special, something extraordinary, something out of the rule, that where you really have to connect two devices together, or maybe a backend and a device, and do real-time communication between them. Then just have in mind, there is something which is called Relay. Then we have our queues, which is a pub-sub mechanism, where you say someone who produces a message is just sending data into a queue, and somebody can consume it. And we as Microsoft, we ensure that this message is consumed exactly once. So this is pretty perfect when it comes to banking, when it comes to reliable messaging, where a message is just allowed to be processed once. Then, very interesting, we have also topic and subscriptions. Topic and subscription is similar to queue, with one difference. A topic allows you to send a message to multiple receivers. So a message comes in, And then this message can be forwarded to multiple receivers. Think about the telemetry thing. A device is sending messages and maybe to multiple receivers. Maybe this is something you can use. We have another system which is called notification, another service. And this notification is used to send on a high scale notifications to devices like this. So if it's a Microsoft device, if it's an Android, an iOS device, we don't care. We have a service which allows you to send within a given amount of time a huge amount of notifications to that device just with a couple of lines of code. But we also have our new Rockstar. We have our new service there, which is now GA, and it's called Event Hub. And Event Hub is something we think perfectly fits to the needs of an IoT solution, and it was developed with having IoT in mind. What is Event Hub now doing? So Event Hub is collecting data from devices, storing that stuff, and forwarding it to consumers. Oops, we heard that story already. So we heard that story already with topic and subscriptions. So from a theoretical point of view, from a functional point of view, both services are doing something very similar. Hey, yep, welcome. So both services are doing something similar, but they are doing it different. One of them is really engineered for high interest, and this is Event Hub. And let me show you how Event Hub is doing that stuff. So Event Hub can connect production lines or sensors in a production line, and one single Event Hub can handle up to 1 million producers. So one Event Hub can handle 1 million devices, and it can have the ingest, and there is a problem on the slide, it's not 1 gigabyte, it's 1 megabyte per second ingest per Event Hub. And this information can be forwarded to interactive dashboards, in my example, for example. But how do we do that? So Event Hub, and that's a difference to topic subscriptions, creates so-called partitions. And data is flowing to that partitions. And I just give you a brief explanation for that partitions. If you want to dig deeper, I'm the whole day here. I'm also during the hackathon here. Let us have a one-on-one conversation. Then I can give you all the details why we have this partition set up there. But the good news is, when telemetry is coming in, it's not limited to one single, let me say, consumer. It can be also distributed to multiple consumers, just like topic subscriptions, but at a much higher scale. And if that's not enough for you, if you want more throughput, if you need more power, you just design the system once, and then you just add so-called throughput units to the system. And a throughput unit can handle 1 megabyte per second of incoming data, which is more or less a write, and it can handle 2 megabyte of egress. So 2 megabyte per second of egress data. And that's really, really powerful. And just to give you a brief information, the difference between topic subscription and Event Hub is that topic subscriptions, they are running a client, they are running a server-side cursor. So in that case, topic subscriptions, the service bus knows exactly what message was already forwarded to a consumer, what message was already processed. In Event Hub, it's different. Event Hub has the notion of a client-side cursor. So in Event Hub, more or less, we just store the incoming information for a given period of time, and then your applications can simply pull the information out of Event Hub. And you can pull it with multiple, we call it consumer groups, and you can process per single consumer group the message multiple times, if you want, if you need. We can go deeper there, but just as a brief explanation, what is Event Hub and the difference to topics and subscriptions? And let me show you how you can use that, because that sounds already pretty tough. You know, 1 megabyte per second, partitions creation. How can we create that stuff? And it's pretty simple. You go to the portal, in that case to the old portal, not the new preview Ibiza portal. It's still in the old portal. You go to Event Hub, you say, hey, I need a new Event Hub. In that case, I call it Rob Eich Demo. I would like to have it in West Europe, I guess. Yes, please run in West Europe and create a new service bus namespace. That's not necessary. In that case, I do it. And then I say, okay, partition counts. How many partitions do I want to have? 8 is the minimum, 32 is the max. And then I had a retention time. And the retention time means how long do we, Microsoft, store the data for you, where you can grab the data out of it. And the max is right at the moment 7 days. And by saying this means 7 days, we store data, incoming data, 1 megabyte per second for 7 days that you can process it. This is very, very powerful. Because in another case, you have to run your own database backend to store that stuff. But that's not all. We make it cooler. This is now the created event hub, and we have something like shared access policies. And shared access policies is more or less just crypto material where you can create tokens and give that tokens maybe to a production line, what I'm doing here. And every sensor in that production line just use that token with a send permission to ingest data. And we can timestamp that token, meaning this token is just valid for an hour, a minute, a week, a month. This heavily makes it more easy for you to create security systems. Because if something got stolen, if something gets compromised, the token itself will be invalid after a given period of time. You have the time period under control. Or you simply say, hey, this token, because I know now this device is stolen, get compromised. You just erase that policy name, and that device is no longer able to send telemetry data. And the cool news is, we as Microsoft take care that this device is no longer sending data. You don't see data coming in. If you run your own system, the data will still hit your endpoint, and you have to deal with that invalid data. In that case, we as Microsoft take care about it. So I think that's pretty interesting. But how can you ingest data into Event Hub? And here I think Microsoft has changed a lot. In the old days, I would be pleased to show you a .NET SDK, which you can use in your .NET C-sharp Visual Basic C++ applications, and then you can go for it. But what do you do if you run maybe an Android-based, an iOS-based, a Linux-based sensor? Well, let us talk later would be the normal answer to that. In nowadays, with the new Microsoft, hey, it's an open interface. So Event Hub can take ingests just by using HTTP posts. So every platform which is capable of creating HTTP posts, and all of those devices here, except for one, this is just a 9 euro device. But really, most of the devices that I see in the world, they are able to create an HTTP post. And we have an interface there to enable HTTP ingest. We can do it more easily with SDKs. Sure, there are SDKs. And the other good news is we are also supporting AMQP, an industry-wide standard for data ingestion, for data transfers. And if you're running, for example, on Linux, just reach out for an AMQP compatible library. There are thousands, there were hundreds. Use that and use just Event Hub as an ingest endpoint and you're connected. The same for the iOS world. And if you have devices which don't support AMQP, as long as they support HTTP posts with SSL, you're fine, you can directly communicate with them. Where are we so far? So I think we talked a lot about ingest, and I would say ingest done. The guy who is doing already ingest, what do you think? Is it good? Is it not good? Just for the records, he said it's phenomenal. Egress. Have we already spoken about egress? Yes, we have spoken about egress. We can read 2 megabytes per second from Event Hub if we really want to do analytics, if we really have to store the stuff. So I would say yes, check mark. Ingest egress is done. Let us come back to alerts. Let us come back where we have to analyze data. Oh yeah, good, you don't see it because I get a Skype mail here. Let us talk about how do we analyze that huge amount of data which is coming in. And when I work with partners, with customers, quite often I see that pattern. Production lines or sensors, devices are sending data, they end up in Event Hub, and then they are processed, they are egressed, they are extracted from Event Hub and stored somewhere in a storage. And if it's a relational database, that's fine. If it's a NoSQL database, that's also fine. If it's just poor blob storage, if it's just a poor file to be processed by an HD Insight job, that's totally fine. So you can do that. And I guess he mentioned he is doing this in a batch-oriented matter. So he is taking the data which is collected, storing it somewhere, and then doing the analytic stuff. Let us come back to the smoke detector example. So we store that data in a database, then we have a job, maybe running every 10 seconds. Select from telemetry where room equals 2 and temperature or smoke is higher than. Okay, it will take a couple of seconds until we have it in Event Hub, then we have to egress it, then we store it, and then we do the query. How long will it take to detect that that smoke detector is already sending, hey, emergency, emergency, emergency? So there's a delay. Wouldn't it be better if we say, here we have data in motion, here we have this data at rest, and then we have again data in motion. Wouldn't it be better if we can do something with this data at rest where we store it somewhere in a database for further analytics, where we can really analyze the stream of incoming data? And yes, there is something inside of Microsoft, inside of Windows Azure, sorry, Microsoft Azure, so-called Stream Analytics. And Stream Analytics is a service that we offer which really can listen on a data stream. So it doesn't store data somewhere in a database, in a location. It just looks to the data stream, to the incoming data stream. And what we can do here is we can do temporal joins, we can filter, we can aggregate, we can do projections, everything based on a time window. So on a hopping window, on a sliding window. And with that functionality, we are able to detect inside of an incoming stream of data that something is not going right there. So we can do something like an average calculation. So if that smoke detector is sending the temperature, we can do inside of Stream Analytics something like take 5 seconds, 2 seconds, and if within these 2 seconds the average of the temperature which is coming into Stream Analytics is higher than a given threshold, maybe 40 degrees, 30 degrees, 60 degrees, you name it, then do something. So more or less filter out of this huge white noise telemetry stream the important stream which needs to be acted on in near real time. And this is exactly what Stream Analytics is doing, and I will show you later how you create that. But we have more magic there. We can also enrich that data stream which is coming maybe from sensors with data at rest, with other streams. And what can we do there? Think about the following. This smoke detector is sending just its ID into a stream, but your analytics need to know which building, which city, which floor, and based on the ID, you can reach out to a database or to a blob store, get more information and feed that information into the stream for further processing. So you can enrich the stream with data at rest, and this is very powerful. And then if you have some analytics, some outcomes of Stream Analytics, you can ingest that to another Event Hub, or out of the box, you can ingest that to a storage, to a SQL database, or to a blob store. And this is very powerful. Let me show you how you do this. So first of all, we go back to our portal. And what we do first, we create another security shared access policy. So now we create something which has the rights to analyze or to listen. In this case, I use all three rights, but just a listen would have been necessary. But more or less, I create just another security token which allows my Stream Analytics job to access the data from that Event Hub. And that's all what I have to do for the first moment. So here's the crypto key. Then I go again to the portal and say, I need something which can listen on that incoming data stream from Event Hub. And this is what I'm doing here. I'm creating a Stream Analytics job, quick create in West US. It will ask me for a storage account. This is something for logging. And that's it. I just click on create. It will take a few seconds. And here's my Stream Analytics job. And now for that Stream Analytics job, I define an input. So I say I have a job. And this job is listening to incoming data from a stream. And in that case, yeah, here it is, Event Hub. I just give that incoming stream a logical name. And remember that name, we will use it later. I call it Telemetry Stream. And here I just select from which Event Hub do I want to get information from. So more or less, I just say I have a logical unit where I can run code. And this unit should listen to all the data which is coming in from a given Event Hub. The data which is coming in is JSON data, it's UTF-8, so I have here some kind of projection mechanism, some kind of modification. And that's it. So now the system is testing the connection. Does this event hub exist? Is the crypto material good enough to access it? And yes, it is. So I have now a job which can run code. I have connected that job to an input. I can also add here reference data if I want. So if I want to enrich the incoming data stream, I can do that here. The next what I do is I define output. So the results of my logic, which we have not yet defined, but the results of that logic, where should it be stored? And as already mentioned, I can store it in a blob, in another event hub, or in a SQL database. And in that example, I'm just using a SQL database. Again, it is asking me for the server, the username, credentials to log on to that SQL database. And that's all what I have to do. I also have to select the table, yes. But that's all what I have to do. And again, remember, we have the event hub, which is taking the telemetry data at high scale. Then we have created that stream analytics job, and we told the stream analytics job, please listen on that incoming information. And the results of that job should be written to a SQL database. And now we still see the testing connection. I hope the Wi-Fi is still up, because it looks like my box is not responding. Yeah, here it is. So, input, output, stream analytics in the middle. That's already defined. Now let us go to the query, to the logic inside of our stream analytics. What do we want to detect from a given, maybe, smoke sensor? And what I can say here is, select all the incoming data. It's T-SQL, or it's a T-SQL-like language. And I say, get everything from the incoming telemetry stream. If you remember, telemetry stream, what the alias I have given to the event hub, which is sending the data. And what I'm doing here is I'm just counting how many ingests do I get, and what's the average temperature of the ingest, and then I group it by a tumbling window of 2 seconds. So more or less what I'm doing here with this single line or three lines of code, I look into the incoming data stream, I count every incoming telemetry, and I calculate the average temperature of the incoming telemetry stream every 2 seconds, and I send the results to a SQL database. I can also send it to another event hub, and this event hub then could react on that information, maybe if it's higher than 50 degrees. And this event hub then can trigger something to a dashboard, something to an evacuation route, to open the evacuation route, and so on. And that's it. That's all what you have to do to analyze in near real time incoming data. And if you would ask me, hey, Robert, what do I do if the incoming telemetry stream is getting bigger and bigger and bigger? I say, yes, look to the streaming units. This is the unit where you can say, I need more processor power to analyze the incoming data stream. So the system will grow with the amount of data you are creating. So you just pay what you need for it, like we have for all the other Azure services. And that's it. That's all what you have to do. A few mouse clicks to create the event hub, a few lines of code to HTTP post into event hub, and then a few lines and the spin up of a stream analytics service to create a near real-time surveillance IoT application which can scale. And not just for 5, 10, 20 users, that really can scale high. This is really hyperscale. And a question to the ingest guys, would you consider using that?
Of course.
So for the records, he said, yes, I will do it. Not just of course. Yeah, just the takeaways. These are just two services that we have on Azure, really already on the portal. Check it out, play with it. I think in the afternoon we have the hackathon where we have devices for you, where we have Arduino units for you. We have hands-on labs, how to connect to our backend pieces. Josh has prepared other hands-on labs for another piece of software that we have. And by saying this, I would like to hand over back to Josh. And yeah, thank you very much.
Switch to the other.
No problem.
Yeah, so 2 minutes.
Here it is.
Okay. So, lots of cool building blocks. And so One of the things that my team has done is we have pulled together it's an open source project. It's a reference architecture built around all these building blocks. It's called Nitrogen, so you can find it at nitrogen.io. It's up on GitHub. It's a MIT license. You can take it and go use it. It's all built in Node.js, NPM installable. There's a handful of different servers that you can get up and running. But you'll see here a lot of the same building blocks that Robert was just talking about. It's an open source project. It's not a supported project from Microsoft. It's a open source project that is built for you to get an idea how you could pull together a IoT framework and an IoT backend. We do actually have people who are using this and have taken it and are extending it and working on it. But what we have is we've got a lightweight REST interface. We actually do REST, MQTT, and AMQP is unstated, but since we're using Event Hub, AMQP is easily accessible as well. And what that'll do is you can talk into the front door. We check against the registry and the authentication. In Node.js, we've written a little server that does the authentication and registry. Everything in the system is a principal. So it's a principal-based system where it's users, devices, applications are all principals within the system. And so they have permissions on each other. So they have permissions to, a user has permissions to see the data from a device. A device has permission to send messages to another device or to a user. An application has permissions to impersonate a user and so on and so forth. So we bring in messages into the front door. We check and see, is this a device that we know? We push it into Event Hub. On the back end of Event Hub, Robert was talking about the 1 megabyte per partition. So you can actually get up to a gigabyte of ingest here and 2 gigs on the outbound here. So quite a bit of input and output. Now that's in throughput units of 1 megabyte each. But you can get up to a gig each per event hub, and then you can have multiple event hubs if you want. And we can load balance across those. And that's how my one customer is getting 4 gigabytes, is they're running 6 of those. So on the back end, we have a number of different configurable consumer groups off of the back of Event Hub. One of them is a spooler that runs out to blob storage for long-term cold storage, table storage, near real-time, and the stream analytics stuff that Robert was talking about. We've also got others. So if you want to use Storm, if anybody's used that before, that there's a Storm provider for Event Hub. The machine learning, actually it reads from table and blob storage. HD Insight, which is a managed Hadoop implementation. We contracted with Hortonworks to go create that for us. So if you've ever heard of Hortonworks, they're awesome. They manage our Hadoop instance there. And then we have message routing, again, off the back of Event Hub, just one of our other consumer groups. So we've got a number of different consumer groups that are doing different things. And those are going to pass back to message routing. And we're using the topics and queues in Service Bus to do our egress out of Azure back to devices. And what that allows us to do is, if you have a fully connected device all the time, something that's always on, then it can just pull the data. However, when talking about a small battery-powered device, it may be only on once a day, twice a day, 3 times a day. And so when it comes on, it can check its mail, so to speak. It can check its topics and say, is there any messages for me? If so, great. And go ahead and pull those. If it's always on, we can push data via WebSockets, but we also have REST queries and MQTT, and somebody is really interested in talking to you, by the way, just so you know. I'll tell Anko you said hello. So this is Nitrogen, and so what this is building on a lot of the building blocks that that Robert was talking about. So with that, questions?